issues. So House bills, administrators come to the board and say, would you kind of ignore the problems with this doctor's application? Because we just need a doctor in this small town. And I never felt very comfortable with that argument. That experience affects how I approach licensure in other areas, and so I am concerned about where the board might go with this, but I'm not, between now and 2006, I'm not worried.
Thank you. Senator Scoglin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My question is, I'm not quite sure how far this goes in terms of definition of schools. When we talk about state-approved innovative schools and programs, charter alternative small and rural schools, doesn't Edina Normandale School, public school, French immersion school, where they have not been able to get licensed French immersion teachers, and they have teachers from France who don't necessarily meet our American criteria. Would it include them so that they can handle deal with these problems? And by the way, those kids are scoring off the charts. Mm-hmm. They're excelling in everything.
Madam Chair.
Senator. Kelly.
Senator Scoglund. I agree. This is not just a rural issue. That's the reason, as we have tried to encourage schools to provide more and different kinds of learning options for students, the unique needs get more complicated. For example, a couple of Minneapolis schools were talking to me about their interest in providing Chinese instruction in the elementary grades. I suspect we might have some challenges with respect to finding licensed Chinese instructors, at least in the short term. So I think there are going to be some challenges.
My question is, though, as it's stated, state-approved innovative schools and programs, charter alternative small and rural schools, are they included in that? Would they be included in that list?
Yes. It would appear from the language, if we're talking about innovative schools, charters, alternative, small, rural, wouldn't they fit small?
Madam Chair.
Senator Kelly.
Madam Chair, I appreciate Representative Erickson's and the board's efforts to bring the House position and the Senate position together. And I think, Senator Scoglin, we have to be careful not to do a run-on sentence as we're thinking about this. The Senate language says that the board is supposed to bring back to the legislature proposed licensure requirements for teachers in interdisciplinary curriculum that happens in innovative schools and programs. Then there's under Representative Erickson's amendment, there's a semicolon. And then the board is also supposed to make recommendations relating to unmet needs for appropriately licensed teachers in charter, alternative, and small and rural schools. And it seems to me that Normandale, whether it was a small school or a charter school or, would meet the need or fit the definition.
Well, I think we're probably all well informed and ready to vote. All right. All those in favor of Amendment A5 as amended, please signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed?
And then, Madam Chair.
Adopted.
Madam Chair, I'll move Section 73 of the Senate language as amended by the A5 amendment.
All right. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? All right. Section 73 has been adopted as amendment. All right. Rolling right along. We'll go back to the other one. It seems to me maybe there was a third one, Senator Kelly, but at the moment I don't seem to find it. But the other one that we talked about yesterday, and you weren't there when we were ready to vote, was the comprehensive scientifically based reading instruction, and that is Amendment A-140.
What article?
Oh, excuse me.
Article 2?
Yes, hold on. It's in Article 2, page 88, R-23 and R-24.
Thank you.
I still have them. If there's people who don't have their copies anymore, we are distributing some other copies. This isn't the right. That's not the right reference.
22.
R-3.
Oh, it is. Okay.
R-3.
This is Section 25 in the Senate and 36 in the House, R-23. All right, this was...
Madam Chair, this is our...
That was your amendment, right?
Yes. This is our definition of reading, blending Senate and House language.
Okay, would you just briefly explain that again?
Well, Madam Chair and Committee, the discussion several weeks ago was about conflicting testimony from the department on what would be the best title for our reading provision. And I had proposed changing comprehensive scientifically based to effective, but in listening to what Senator Kelly had heard in policy and Senate from the department, we decided it was best to return to comprehensive scientifically based. We hope that everyone can understand that that doesn't mean we're teaching reading and science, which was what the debate was about in the House, unfortunately. And then inserting the language from the Senate in beginning, if you're looking at the amendment, line 11.
This is pretty thoroughly discussed yesterday, Senator Kelly, but if you have some questions about it, I'm sure we'd be glad to respond.
Madam Chair, I appreciate the efforts to work with the department on this, and my concern, apart from the words used, were that the department had convened a group of highly qualified teachers to talk about how to do some of these revisions, and I just wanted to make sure that we were respecting the work that they had done. So I
looks to me like
the substance is
all right.
Well, Madam Chair, just to follow up on
Erickson.
Thank you to Senator Kelly. The only reason it became effective was that we had debate in the House Policy Committee about what comprehensive scientifically based reading meant. And so to allay those fears that we were going to teach reading in science, I changed it with the recommendation of Commissioner Nelson to effective, and it opened up all sorts of problems. So thank you very much for agreeing that. We'll return to this. It was former Representative Segrin's initial language anyway, so I think I offended her a bit by making this change.
Senator Kelly, we both have our English teachers. All right, all those in favor of, I guess it's A-140 amendment on reading. All in favor, please say aye.
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 Opposed? All right, and we have approved the amendment.
Madam Chair.
Senator.
I'll move adoption of Section 36 of the House language as amended.
Yes.
By the A-140 amendment.
All right. Is there any further discussion? All right. All those in favor of adopting Senate Section 25 as amended, in favor, please say aye.
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 Opposed?
Aye.
this section is adopted also. All right, one of the, did you pass this out? Is that passed out? Okay. One of the things we thought maybe we should hit is the fund transfers. We don't have to make all the decisions today, but we should talk about them a little bit. And I thought it would be interesting to know the criteria that you followed, because I know we had many, many requests for fund transfers, et cetera, this year, and only, you know, certain number of them were accepted. And essentially, when we looked at them, we considered if they were an SOD, we might give them special consideration. If they were transferring money within accounts but not necessarily levying, depending on what they were doing in their case. In one case, it was consolidation of districts, and I see that we did the same one there. And we also recognized the effort if a school district had had a sale of land or building, allowing use of those dollars. Because in most cases, we're finding old school buildings are being sold to the highest bidder for about a buck. So I really compliment a school district that can salvage something from an old school building. So anyway, that is kind of where we were coming from, and I thought maybe you might want to talk about the guidelines that the Senate was following.
Madam Chair, the fund transfers and the policy that the Senate used was, as you recall, the Senate had a zero levy target in its bill, and so any of the fund transfers that had a cost to them, we had to buy that cost back. Okay. So that we kept our zero levy increase. We also considered those transfers where they were capital, from a capital fund, mm-hmm. and generally did not, I think, Mr. Nauman's not here, but I don't think we did any transfers from capital to operating. So those, we...
You did transfers from what to what?
We did do transfers within the capital accounts, where there was, generally some revenues left over from a building project that... they wanted to transfer to the capital operating fund or something. Okay. We also had some fund transfers where there was a disability levy that had been...
You're talking about the one up in northern Minnesota, right?
The one that comes to mind, actually it wasn't really a transfer, that was a levy. That just actually was a straight-up levy.
They hadn't gotten it done during their years because of the flooding.
Right. Mm-hmm. Like that was East Grand Forks School District. Yeah. So really, those were the two kind of approaches that we used. One was that we had to buy out the levies if there was a levy cost to it to keep the zero levy increase, and the second was transfers within, the capital accounts.
Madam Chair.
Representative Biskins.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, Senator Stump. So in looking at the Senate fund transfers, there is no levy increases that occurred due to your fund transfers here. Is that correct?
Madam Chair, that's correct. And As I mentioned, when there was a levy cost, that cost had to be purchased back with state funds, or we had to account for it by within our bill so that we did not generate a levy increase. And as you know, that's a difficult thing for a lot of people to understand: is why is there a cost to the state? when you have when you allow a local district to levy, whether it's for a project or whatever, but that is the way it operates, and I'm sure Mr. Crow, we account for both the aid side and the levy side, and on the levy side, when there was a levy, it is the way the best way to describe it is that let's say a district levies for a capital project. They're required to levy, I believe, 105% when they sell bonds, and that extra 5% is kind of assurance to the to those bondholders that they'll get paid back. Well, at the end of the project, sometimes there's those extra dollars left in the fund that are not spent, and school districts quite often would like to use that money for something, either. You know, I think a lot of districts would like to put it into their general operating funds. The statute says that that money is meant to reduce property taxes in that district. And so when we allow the district to spend that money, we have to pay for it because, or we have to account for it because that is a cost, a tax increase in a sense, even though that money is sitting there. And it's just, I think it's more the accounting of it, or the way we account for it, that it creates a cost.
Sure. Madam Chair.
Representative Biskin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So, Senator Stump, and I appreciate the explanation and walking through that. It's always good to, as it does become a little complicated, continue to hear it over and over again. My question is, what... In the Senate fund transfers, then, did you ever have an opportunity? Well, you must have if you're carrying it in the aid, all right? What was the mechanism? How much, first off, how much aid was needed to be expended to buy back the, you know, the levy acknowledgement? And then what was the mechanism used to do that in the Senate bill?
Where's Mr. Miller?
It's sure. Maybe Mr. Crow. You have both an aid tracking sheet and a levy tracking sheet, and it's carried on the levy tracking sheet.
Madam Chair,
Mr. Crow,
Representative Biskins, and members, if you remember when we went through the levy tracking sheet, there were several levy increases in the Senate bill. And if you have it in front of you, you don't have to turn there because there's only a few lines, but it's between lines 76 and 81 are some of the fund transfers and levies the Senate has. In the four disabled fund access fund transfers, there's approximately $575,000 of new levy in the Senate bill. One of the methods the Senate uses, we sometimes talk about it as paying off levies with aid in order to meet a zero levy target, but that's not actually what happened this year in the Senate bill. Because the Senate adopted the maximum effort loan rate reduction proposal, the Senate bill, as did the House bill, and the governor carried a savings of $3.145 million in levy reduction because of adopting that maximum effort loan provision. So that, in the Senate's case, really became the Senate levy target, $3.1 million. So when the Senate assembled their bill, they had $3.1 million of levy to spend in their bill, even though they had a zero levy. But because of the adoption of that maximum effort school loan change, they really had a $3 million levy target. And similarly, even though the House's target was $112 million of levy, the House actually had $115 million of levy to spend because of adopting that maximum effort school loan change.
Thank you.
Senator, Do you want to talk about any of these? The Lake Crystal Welcome Memorial was kind of a special one where we did allow them to transfer from their disability access account only because they have been in SOD for a couple of years, and this is part of their plan to get out of SOD, and they have, I believe, 1 year. We give them 1 year to achieve getting out of SOD? 2 years? No.
Three.
We gave them 3 years. So anyway, that was the reason that we did it for Lake Crystal Welcome. Otherwise, we didn't really do many of those kinds of things.
Madam Chair, I gave a couple of kind of criteria that we used. I do have to say that we did consider those districts that are in statutory operating debt as well.
Okay.
And I think for a good reason, because those districts are in rather unique circumstances with their finances, and we do have special special statutes that help deal with that. And so I think that too was one of the criteria that we used.
Well, we thought, do you want to, you know, discuss any of these? You have we have one that was not matched by you, and you have, six.
Mm-hmm.
So
I think, Madam Chair, what I'd like to do is I think the House will hopefully give us an offer.
So you want to wait till we make an offer on this?
And then that'll give us a chance to visit with Eric or Mr. Nauman. Hopefully he'll be back shortly. But I think it does. Each year there are a number of districts that come in, and quite often the list gets rather lengthy. And I think the last couple 3 years, because the funding was getting extremely tight in districts, districts found any cash that they could in funds that they had and wanted to make use of those funds. And I think so there's a tremendous amount of pressure on transfers this year, but hopefully that will change. I know we've tried to address the a number of those funds in different ways. Those funds that currently, where there's a building capital project, I think in the future will not have those reserves or leftover funds as we have in the past, and primarily because districts are using better ways to calculate and reduce that excess, either by reducing the bond that they sell or having, you know, better ways of calculating the cost of those projects. So I think as we move forward, we will probably and as we adequately fund education, I think we'll have fewer and fewer needs for fund transfers in the future.
You know, there was another one that was in a different section that dealt with Waconia. It's in Article 4. Where's Article 4?
I believe that was an amendment that was put on the Senate floor.
Okay. Article 4, Section 23, and that's R13. And we did it. We did the same thing, only we did it differently. Mm-hmm. And so I think we should compare what we did and figure out where we want to be. We both did the Worthington thing, but right above that on R13 is your Waconia one. And then we did ours in Article 1, Section 44. And that's our R28. would be Section 44 on page 28. And what we did is we just extended, you can see it down at the bottom of R29, actually, the last two lines. A school district may lease administrative space under this section if the district can demonstrate to the commissioner's satisfaction that the administrative space is less expensive than instructional space that the district would otherwise lease. So it opens it up actually to other districts as well if it's a savings to the district to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And that's using the lease levy, right?
Madam Chair, on that, I'm a little uncomfortable with that approach because I think...
Even with the caveat of savings?
Well, I think we need to look long-term at what's going to happen, and we may want to have a little bit of a discussion on that. The Senate looked at Waconia more as a specific project versus creating a statewide policy for leasing administrative space. We've had a number of bills that have been introduced for districts to lease space, and I'm not totally convinced that that approach is what we may want to do.
Does anybody else want to comment on these two approaches? Where essentially Waconia is in both bills. It's just a question of how we do it. So, mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think the language that the Senate has is very specific to Waconia.
Right.
The House language is opens it up to all districts.
Madam Chair, could you take me to where you are in the bill? I'm sorry, I came in late. And
yes, we're on. We're talking about the Waconia issue, which we two totally different ways. The Senate version is Article 4, R13, and it's Section 23 on R13. The House version is Article 1, and it's on the verbiage itself is R29. The section is 44, which begins on R28.
Okay.
And what we do is we allow leasing for administrative space, the lease levy for the administrative, if the district can show that that is a savings as opposed to using the instructional space that they might have to take or whatever the case might be.
This is Senator Ortman's bill.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Oh, so you had the bill. All right.
Thank you.
Senator, maybe you'd just like to give us the rationale for why you didn't think this could be a statewide ability for districts.
Well, I think the rationale was currently. In the Waconia case, they were going to build a new building, and I wish Senator Ortman was here to give you all the details. But it seemed like it was a temporary situation in the Waconia case that was needed, and Senator Ortman convinced the Senate that they needed to, their classroom space requirements were expanding, and that they had this building project that they were going to move forward on, and they temporarily needed that extra class, the current administrative space for classroom space. And so the the leasing of administrative buildings was more of a stopgap until the building project, the new building project, was done. And I think that was kind of the rationale that she gave to the Senate.
Mr. Chairman, I represent part of Waconia District too, so it's been a part of that. But I believe Mr. Deans is here and could I think give us a good explanation of it as well. But I do know that their administrative offices are in an older school. They need that space for classroom, and they need it immediately. And rather than the delay, they would, if they could lease really less costly space, it would be a help to them. And it is not meant to be in a permanent arrangement.
Mr. Deans,
if any of our explanations can be clarified by him, we'd appreciate it.
Can you shed some light on this?
Madam Chair, my name is Tom Deans, and I'm legal counsel of the School Board Association. I am in the process of doing a financing that relates to this space. What's happened is Waconia School District would like to keep its instructional space together. It would like to move its administrative space out of that building. The Carver Scott Educational Cooperative is doing a lease purchase financing where they would renovate this older building, and Carver Scott would use a portion of it, and Waconia would use a portion of it for its administrative space. And as time went on during the term of that lease, Waconia would take over more of that space, and at the end of the time, that space would belong to Waconia. This has been done, this authority has been granted three or four different times before, at least three times before, I think, to other school districts where it was shown that that keeping that instructional space in the building with the rest of the instructional space was a better solution for the kids than keeping the administrative space there and leasing the instructional space in in another building somewhere else and then breaking up the program.
Is that as you remember it, Senator?
Yes. The need was to, and what I can't remember is on the new building, how soon that's going to be done so that...
Mr. Chairman, the financing, in theory, if we can have a little time to work on it, is expected to close in about 3 weeks. And hopefully that building will be completed within a year, and they will be able to move, and everyone will be in that building, and Waconia will be able to remodel its space to accommodate instructional space there, and they'll move their administrative offices out of there. So they'll have all instructional space in the school, and this space out here would be where they'd put their administrators, much like they do in many other school districts.
Mr. Dean, I guess my question for you would be, is it uncommon for a need like this to arise? I realize Waconia is rapidly growing. I drive by it often. By it, not through it. Through it, actually. I mean, the houses sprouting up around Waconia are amazing. Chaska's doing the same thing. Do you find this, I guess what we thought is this need is out there in growing districts. If they can save money doing it, should we not make it available to them without a special legislation? And I guess that was our rationale for this. So I'm asking you, are you seeing, I know we have a lot of districts shrinking, do we have many growing?
Madam Chair, it depends on where you are. If you head out towards Waconia, everything out there is growing. If you head towards St. Michael, Elk River, if you go up any of the freeways, it's exploding. If you go to Senator Olson's area, or Senator Erickson, or Representative Erickson's area, the Princetons, the Cambridges, those districts are back where we were about 15 years ago when we were doing a major bond issue every other year in Osseo, Eden Prairie, Rosemont, like that, where we would just be timed. And every other year we'd do one because you've got an entire school of kids moving into the district every year. As you go out that way, and including all the way down almost to New Prague and the like now, I mean, they're all, that bunch is growing. We understand that others are not growing that way, but the ones that are, it kind of goes back to when we used to have a declining enrollment aid and a fast growth aid in the 70s and that. I mean, there's the arguments are as compelling sometimes when you're growing as when you're declining, and they need to be able to accommodate that. The House language would have the benefit that you wouldn't need to keep having these bills come back every year to address individual situations where you may or may not get your bill through, depending on that year and how everybody felt about things.
Or whether we got a bill?
Or whether you got a bill. Waconia, this money will have to come out of somewhere, and if it doesn't come out of this, it's going to have to come out of their program. So they're going to have to do it.
So my question, Mr. Deans, would be, do you think there's a savings in adding to this to the bill? Can districts realize savings here, or doesn't it matter?
Madam Chair, you would think in most circumstances that administrative space would be less expensive than instructional space, but that may not always be the situation. I guess in this case they'd have to show that it was. I mean, you wouldn't have to build in some of the stuff right. that you have to for instructional space, and you wouldn't have to have the strange things that you have to build into school buildings that are more expensive when you're building a building that's basically for adults.
Senator, and Madam Chair, I don't think it's totally an issue of with this concept of administrative space versus instructional space, the actual cost of the space. But I think the motivation that Waconia has, and I think others would have in doing so, is the educational and the operational costs. Because it's cheaper to operate it all with instructional space together rather than to have to do temporarily find some other space to accommodate some growth in the interim before another building is built, and as well as educationally, to have that together. And so that's part of the motivation for being able to accommodate some of that growth now until they're ready for that next hurdle by inconveniencing, if you will, administration and putting them in a different place.
And Madam Chair, I think this is all about the instructional program.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
Keeping that instructional program together, you know, then you don't have to transport the kids, you know, have buses and haul the kids over to this. That the administrators drive over there and they go there, and they have to drive back to one of the buildings, they do it on their own. We don't necessarily, depending on what the program is, we don't necessarily let the kids do that. If they're in high school, maybe we do, but all kids don't have cars and the like. So that's another authorized transportation. But it's been done in all the cases that you've allowed, including the Waconia case. It's been done because it would be better for the instructional program to have those put instructional space where that administrative space is in the existing building and move the administrative space somewhere else.
Senator Stump, did you have a...
Madam Chair, I don't think the issue that we're discussing is about whether we should or should not do it for Waconia. I think that's kind of a given that
right.
it's both in the House and the Senate bills.
Right.
I think the issue is, and it goes back to any of you who have served on the... either the bonding or the capital investment committee. The issue is between leasing and ownership, and the issue of whether it's cheaper to lease or more expensive to lease or own, one or the other. The information and the research that the Department of Administration has done over the years has indicated that ownership is less expensive than leasing. That's been our experience, and the department has done a number of studies over the years. And we have paid more by leasing. And I think the issue is if you open it up, the way the fear, I guess, is that you would have districts, because leasing is, in a sense, easier because building is, you know, it's more complicated. You got to have projects, and you got to convince the public who are going to pay for those projects. Whereas leasing, you come up with an annual payment or whatever and can keep on going. And I think the question before us ought to be is what's the best approach for our districts in the long run and for our taxpayers in the long run? Should they own those buildings, and is it of greater value to the taxpaying public to own those buildings than it is to have leases? And I think that's the issue. And believe me, in the Capital Investment Committee or the bonding committees, that has been debated back and forth, partly because it's easier for us to come up with a payment to give to the CNM Corporation who owns this building downtown each year than it is for $10 million to build a new building, or 12 or 20 or whatever. So, but I think that's the crux, and we weren't willing to change the policy that we currently have, at least on the Senate side.
Madam Chair.
Because we weren't convinced.
Senator Scheid.
Madam Chair, I would say to my Senate colleague, there's already the capacity or the authority, I guess, to request from the department permission to do levies for other kinds of buildings, whether it's instructional space or storage space. It looks like you can already do that in the House, just added the administrative space. So right. They already, and it seems there's some, I mean, there's a safety valve there, I think, Senator Stumpf, with the department. I think my common sense, or my sense of my common sense, tells me that we could end up costing taxpayers more in the long run if we make them delay and have it come get a bill passed. And I'm suspecting that sometimes the politics are that maybe some people just haven't been successful, or maybe they have all been successful, but it has been really it has probably had some expense to it to come and let us make the decision, whereas the department, it seems to me, could look at the financial issues and make a determination that it would be less expensive. I don't have trouble with just adding administrative space to that. Are we doing something more for Waconia here that would be an...
No.
Or
no.
This is the section, right? Section 44 is the extent of...
Right.
And they have to demonstrate that it saves money.
Mm-hmm. Senator, I think when you look, I think from our perspective, when you look at renting these portable classrooms, they're pretty expensive to rent those. And that, of course, is all a lease that can be levied against property taxes, whereas possibly there's other space available that administration could move into and let the kids be in the school building, that kind of thing. It seemed to make sense. Now, I notice you have a more process in your language. Would it make you more comfortable if we combined your process with making this ability available to all districts?
Madam Chair and Mr. Deans, currently Senator Scheid mentioned that the districts do have the ability to lease for classroom space.
Mr. Chairman,
Mr. Deans.
That's correct. This is sort of a difficult explanation sometimes. If you're doing a true lease where you end up with no ownership or whatever, you can lease pretty near whatever you want to. If you're doing a lease purchase agreement, You can't lease something that exceeds 20% of the size of the existing building if you're doing pure K-12 type of leasing. However, if you're doing a specialized building, like a vocational building or a special ed building, an EBD building, something like that, then you can lease purchase that whole building.
And in those cases, we generally, Madam Chair, in those cases, we generally, when you have a lease, straight lease for, let's say, classroom space, the district just basically levies for that lease payment. There is no accountability back to the taxpayers except through the board.
Mr. Deans.
Well, Ms. Sherman, I guess it's not voted upon, if that's what you meant.
No.
However, you do have the board, as you say. You also, if this is a large project, are required to get department approval for the levy, and you're required to get a department review and comment on the project. So it has to go through the same process as you would go through for a building thing, where the department looks at what you're doing and sees if it makes any sense, sees if you have a commercially reasonable lease rate, and the whole thing. These just don't slide through with anything anybody wants to do. They have to go through and be tested.
Any more? Are there any more questions or comments on this issue? I think we'll just drop it for the moment.
Thank you.
Unless, you know, you have a proposal at this point. Otherwise, we'll just move along.
Okay.
We have Senator Scheid is here, and I believe you, the English teachers, were going to work out some language on gifted and talented. Is that correct?
Yes. Yes, Madam Chair, we have before us the Scheid Amendment.
I see that it was given my name.
So that we could bring together...
which was that again?
Madam Chair, that's...
Article 2R11.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Senator Scheid?
Yes, Madam Chair. What we've done is merge...
Scheid, is this your handwriting?
It is.
I can tell you're an old teacher.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Actually, I didn't teach a long time ago.
Old teacher.
I am an old teacher. I do substitute teach now. That's all right.
It's kind of the Palmer method. Which I'm sure dates me, but that's my handwriting, too.
Madam Chair, so you... Both the House and the Senate provision are on this page, and the House provision is Section 20 to the left, and the Senate is Section 12. We have kind of, I think our Representative Erickson offered this A3 amendment the other day, or we discussed it, and we decided that we should do just the simple authorizing language, saying we may identify students. That's the House piece. And then take the Senate language, which is page 52, line 7, subdivision 1. Use may instead of must, and just take that down through line 13, 52.13. So kind of merging the two approaches. Instead of saying must, say may. I know the House has money in the bill for gifted and talented. Arguably, you don't need to tell districts they can do it, but I think this gives some guidance as to how the department would prefer they approach establishing those programs, and that's what you have here.
Mm-hmm. Are there any questions or comments on this amendment?
Madam Chair.
Senator Stone.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Scheid, the first sentence where school districts may ID students?
Well, Mr. Chairman, I did a little short. If you look at the language on R11, it is identify, and it wouldn't be ID. The statute wouldn't say ID. I'm sorry. I was, and my, they probably won't use the ampersand. Well, that's not quite an ampersand, whatever you call that. And, you know, they'll use the word, but... otherwise, I think the punctuation is appropriate, and
Hopefully I didn't misspell anything. I don't have spell check on my on my handwriting.
Sometimes that's good.
Yes.
All right. That answers your question, Senator Stone?
Yes, it does. Mm-hmm.
I'm sure I'd move.
All right.
This
All right.
Amendment.
8-3 amendment has been moved. Are there any other comments or discussion of this amendment? So, yeah. Seeing none, all those in favor, please say aye.
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 Excuse me, I didn't ask for opposed. I didn't think there were any. Amendment is adopted. All right.
Maybe Senator Scheid wants to move for adoption, too. That'd be
Amendment is adopted, but we need...
Here. Thank you. Yes, we had to amend the amendments there. Yes, I'd move the adoption of this amendment then.
All right, so... we are accepting this as an amendment to the Senate language.
Yes.
Okay. Are there any further questions or discussion, Senator?
Madam Chair, we're accepting it into to incorporate it into the bill now.
Right.
Correct.
Yeah. Right. So we would be moving this in, and it would become Section 12, essentially. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Amendment adopted.
Sure.
We are making some progress here. All right. I thought if we go to Article 2, that would be R65. There's that little piece, and I don't think we dealt with it yet. Did we, the Perpich Center for the Arts? It was allowing them to do phone stuff, right? So that's R65 and Article 2.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, it's recollection of staff that that has already been adopted.
Was it adopted? Yep. Sorry. I hadn't marked it in my book. Okay.
The electronic board meetings?
Yeah. All right, good. One more down.
Didn't the date didn't count.
All right. Thought we had to talk a little bit about safe schools. There's kind of two issues there. One is, I think, if you look on... R30 in Article 1. Should be Section 47. Right. And now we both have safe schools and levy, and I believe the House adds school counselors in our language, and you add counselors, social workers, nurses, and school psychologists. And obviously we both want to do something with this, and the question is what?
Madam Chair.
Senator Kelly.
Madam Chair, the certainly the, I think, I'm sure both the House and the Senate are concerned about ensuring safe schools and recognizing the roles that school support staff can play with respect to doing that. It's just that I think the discussion on the Senate side was that under the heading of safe schools and given the when you look at the safe schools levy and the kinds of activities that support that, including paying attention to drug abuse programs, gang resistance education, drug abuse, violence prevention, those are not support activities performed solely by school counselors. They are also performed by social workers and school nurses, and so the policy rationale within Safe Schools levy for limiting it to counselors didn't come through clearly to the Senate.
Madam Chair?
Representative Biskin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair and Senator Kelly, having firsthand knowledge of the job of an assistant principal when it comes to discipline and safety of a school, would the Senate also consider adding administrators to the list? And Madam Chair.
Madam Chair, anything to accommodate Representative Biskin.
Madam Chair.
Maybe you can get an increase.
Yeah, Madam Chair.
We don't have enough assistant principals, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Senator Kelly. Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Senator Kelly, for the that acknowledgement of the importance. But the
Madam Chair,
the reason, Madam Chair, just to on the serious side, I guess this was, I think, you know, the rationale behind why the House went the direction it went. All right, was because the Safe School levy is not, you know, a huge levy. The House increases it by $3, all right? You know, looking at, the thing is, we could go down a whole list, and where to draw the line on the list was one of our concerns. All right, and basically, I think the only difference between the House and the Senate position really is where the line was drawn. All right, the House drew its line after one edition. The Senate drew its line after, you know, is it five editions? And I'm not saying that's wrong. All right, not at all. All right, but what I am saying is, And the example I put forward is that the House also, or the Senate also, drew a line. Right? We're not all encompassing, even at the Senate language. All right, as far as using the Safe School levy to support those who make our school safe. All right, and so I think that's the discussion that we're looking forward to. That we had in the House, and we should have here.
Madam Chair.
Senator.
Madam Chair, I think this is really part of a broader debate that we'll have to have with respect to some differences between the House and the Senate on finances. I certainly feel strongly, based on what I've learned, that we need more counselors in our schools. The ratio of counselors to students is not appropriate, and if we want to, particularly if we want to increase the number, thinking about high school and middle school, if we want to increase the number of our students who are ready to go on to college, which I think is a goal shared by both the House and the Senate, one of the mechanisms by which we'll get to that goal is to have more school counselors. So I think the Senate certainly supports the notion that we are not meeting student needs with respect to school counseling. The challenge is, I think the debate between the House and the Senate on this is similar to the one for gifted and talented education that we may have, which is, do we add a lot of money to the formula and leave it to the districts to allocate that among teachers, school counselors, social workers, so forth, or do we, in effect, create new categoricals with respect to certain classes of school employees, including potentially assistant principals, and or do we leave it to the school districts to do? And I think the Senate reaction was, okay, if somebody's going to argue that the legislature should reserve certain revenue for certain school employees, and they're going to do it under the heading of safe schools rather than under a different heading, like how do we get more kids into college, then everybody who participates with respect to safe schools
ought to be in that reserved revenue. If you want to do it a different way and under a different heading where school counselors are uniquely involved, fine, but that's not the way we did it. We did it under Safe Schools. And so if we're going to do that, then everybody who's involved in school safety should be involved in the reserved revenue. So, or another possibility is to just not do either the House or the Senate language and leave it to the school boards to allocate revenue. And I'm concerned about the direction we've gone during the last 3 years because of the budget pressures school districts have faced. We've gone the wrong direction on the availability of school counselors. But I'm still a little reluctant to tell school districts how many school counselors they're supposed to have.
Representative Demmer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, Senator Kelly, I'm not in total disagreement with a lot of things you've been saying. I carried the bill in the House, this particular one. This is not about trying to, at least in our discussions, we did have quite a discussion in committee on this before we passed it. And, in fact, there was an amendment to do what you've done here and basically make all school support personnel be eligible for this this levy. Number one, I firmly believe that it should be in the control of school boards, as you just stated. They should make the choice about how they utilize these funds. We did not say they have to use a certain dollar amount toward counselors. What we said is actually we increased the levy authority to $30 from $27, and we just simply made school counselors another category of things that they could use it for if they would choose. They wouldn't have to do anything if they didn't want to. So that was number one, very important to me, because I like to empower school boards to make those sorts of decisions just about all the time. Secondly, again, as I said earlier, it's not about choosing which of the school support personnel are more important or less important. That's not it. They all have a place, and you can't even categorize. There's not silos upon which their responsibilities fall, so there is bleeding across, if you will, in what they do. However, the purpose for the legislation and the reason we did keep it to counselors is because counselors is probably the one area that that we don't have any other means for which to try to pay for their services and to try to include those in categorical. You know, school nurses, schools, psychologists, and those sorts of things. A lot of those can be included as reimbursable expenses in special ed and that sort of thing. There is a category for counselors. You can do that, but it never gets used. And so this was simply, and the other thing is the Safe Schools levy is not a huge levy to begin with.
Yeah.
It's $27, we're going to $30. That's, in a school like one of the ones I represent is maybe $3,000 difference for $3 more. That's not going to pay for a whole lot of school support personnel, but it may help with a counselor. And so the purpose of this, again, is not to pick and choose. It's simply to give school boards another tool within which to maybe make it more difficult to have the counselor be the one that they lop off, if you will, as opposed to, and then they make their changes. So that was the reason for it, being reasonable in terms of the amount of dollars that's available. How thinly do we want to spread how they can use that extra $3 or that 30 or 27 or whatever we end up with? This is just an idea to just expand it by this one category and give those school counselors, if nothing else, the idea that we do value their importance. And that's the purpose of us keeping it to the counselors and not including all the support personnel. With due respect, and I've had all of them in my office many times, and I think they understand I value their services and agree with them, but that's what the purpose of this was.
Hey, actually, the House moved it to $30. The Senate stayed at $27. Am I correct?
Madam Chair, the House repealed the Safe Schools levy and then had reserved revenue from the consolidated levy. And I think that's still, I mean, I'm the Senate,
Senate
excuse
that,
me. And then I think the Senate's number did stay at the 27 for the reserved revenue.
And then I think the other issue with this would be we still have a separate category for this, and you wanted to roll it into the formula, correct?
No.
Do it as a roll-in or an add-on? Or
Madam
what were you
Chair,
doing?
It was a single consolidated levy, but in order to preserve the flow of funds, the amount of money going to the state, to the Safe Schools, would be reserved. In the same way that we reserve a certain amount of revenue for staff development, we're telling the school districts they have to reserve $27 out of the out of the consolidated levy for the purpose of safe schools programs.
So essentially, though, you were throwing it into the formula, and then they must reserve it.
Not the formula, but consolidated levy. Not into.
Oh, you're putting into the consolidated levy. I'm sorry.
But Madam Chair, it says must reserve from the basic revenue. It's we're reserving from the basic revenue. Well, the consolidated levy was a general, it became kind of like a general education levy. It didn't add any new revenue.
Right.
So it's included in basic revenue.
Okay.
And then it's a reserve.
Okay.
So that is the formula.
Okay. That was my understanding that you added 27 to the formula. And so the question is, you want to put it into the formula, I think. You know, we were looking at continuing it as it was.
And Madam Chair?
Yes.
And Madam Chair, is Representative Biskins want to add assistant principals and then maybe double it? Is that a thing?
You aren't going to live this one down, Representative.
Madam Chair?
Yes. You may defend yourself, Representative.
Madam Chair, Senator Olson, an intriguing thought that I'll kick around.
Mr. Chairman, we'll see how far he can kick.
Madam Chair, in terms of how the money is handled, I think that would be better discussed with respect when Senator Stumpf is here, because the consolidated levy came from the division.
Okay.
The work on the policy change of including school counselors also was done in the division, but the division, the Senate adopted that language. All I can say to Representative Demmer is, we've all been around long enough to know that the holy grail of government funding is to get your own revenue source for your program. So I've seen enough people do it, so I don't, it's not a black mark on school counselors that they came looking for their own dedicated revenue source, but everybody else does too. So the question is, if we're going to go down this road for school counselors, is it only for school counselors? So we really have two choices. Don't do it at all. Three, I guess. Don't do it at all, which probably makes better policy sense in terms of leaving it to the school districts to make choices about the allocation of their funds. Do it just for school counselors in the Safe Schools Levy. But if you're talking about Safe Schools Levy, then why not other people who contribute to Safe Schools? And I know that some of the other activities are reimbursable for other things, but not all. For the other personnel. So
so that we probably spend enough time on this one, Senator, right? Okay, so this will just be, part of an offer at some point, or not even included at some point. I wanted to ask you, this is another one that Article 3, it's House Section 20. I just wanted to get through as much of this stuff as possible. And it's R-15.
How much? What?
R-15. And this is something that came to us very late, and I think your bill might have been wrapped up. Is that right? I think that's why we have it and you don't. And I'll just let Mr. Strom explain it. He'll explain it a little more lucidly than I will probably.
Madam Chair, this is the provision in R-15, Article 3, Section 20. It has to do with the current year, the fiscal year 2005 appropriation for special education excess costs. And what this provision does is sets aside $150,000 of that amount for the East Central School District because of the closure of the Wilder St. Croix camps. I believe when we talked about this earlier, the Senate was going to check with Senator Lori to about this provision.
Pardon? Do you have it?
No. Madam Chair, I'm sorry. I thought we had some discussion of this.
Madam Chair, I think Senator Laurie mentioned it in the floor debate on something, and I can't remember what it was, but I did go back and talk to her. And, Madam Chair, without Senator Stumpf here, I'd be hesitant to take action, but it's possible that as part of some offer, the Senate might be open to looking at this. Did I put enough qualifiers on that one, Madam Chair?
Well, that was a real firm response, Senator. As my husband says, we have certainly learned how to speak around an issue. He accuses me of that all the time. I guess the thing is, the way we looked at it is East Central is kind of left holding a bag here. We can bail them out using some of the total excess cost aid. We don't have to make this decision today because there is money connected, but I thought it would be good to talk about the concept of whether or not we should be doing this. And it was not of their doing that this happened.
Madam Chair, I don't think the Senate has a position on principle against doing this.
Madam Chair?
Senator Shire.
Madam Chair, I just urge you to not forget to include it.
Kind of like the milk. Can't forget the milk. Okay, we will mark this as not determined, but something we should do. Okay. Got that, guys? All right. Okay, we have another thing that we think we ought to look at. And this is in Article 4. And this is some stuff on alternative facilities bond sales. It's R2. And it was in the governor's recs. It's actually sections 3, 4, 7, and 9, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And you didn't include them. And I just wondered if there's a reason.
Madam Chair, this would have been in Senator Stumpf's bailiwick.
Should we?
And I think we should wait to discuss it until he's here.
Okay.
Because I don't know if any other members of the working group can tell you the answer.
Okay. All right, we were just curious, you know, what you had in mind with this, or... All right. I think that brings us to the back page. Then we have a little trade proposal here. We have a section on character ed, and a section on some backpack items, which is why we're lovingly referring to it. But it's Article 2, Section 50. Section 50, yeah. Oh, I'm sorry, I didn't give you a page, did I? I don't think I have a page down on this. Section 50 is R41. Okay, thank you. R41, Section 50. What we are going to propose is that we would take your bullying and in return.
Can we start now, ma'am?
Yes. That was good. We take your bullying all the time.
Madam Chair, I thought I'd been pretty amiable.
What's new about that? That did sound funny. We would accept R18, Section 21 in return for Section 50 on R41 and Section 21 on R12. which we already talked about quite a bit, the character education. We talked about that. We didn't talk about the one on R41. So,
Madam Chair, my first reaction is that it might be possible to balance both the violence prevention, bullying, and comprehensive sexual education provisions with the House character education language, because they all kind of relate to educating kids about important stuff.
Yeah.
Unlike Section 50, which does not relate to educating kids.
It relates to education, though, sir.
No, but...
whose was that? So in order to... you think you're bullying and... you think you're
the
bullying...
Anti-bullying language.
Section. We definitely want Senate anti-bullying. Oh, that's on R12. Where's the other one you mentioned?
The violence prevention, I think, is right before that. It'd be Article 2, Section 13 of the Senate on page R11.
I wish these things weren't all on different pages. Mm.
The very bottom.
Okay.
You got 30? Section 13. Oh, the Senate.
Yeah, Madam Chair, it goes over onto R12. Mm.
Don't districts already have some kind of anti-harassment, all that kind of... So what does this do?
Yeah, this is current law.
Well, and Madam Chair,
right.
The only addition here is the language on 53.19, and the I think the idea behind this was I can't remember the I know Representative Clark was the House author. I think it was Senator Pappas or Senator Henderson. Or Senator Ranum. Okay. The idea here was to there are certain skills that help a young person protect himself or herself, including paying attention to your surroundings, knowing where to walk, other kind things that would help a student protect himself or herself in a number of situations. I think when it was originally introduced, it sounded too martial for some people's tastes. And so in the discussion in the Senate, we changed it to self-protection and incorporated it into, as you said, existing programs. But the notion of equipping students with some positive self-protection skills, I think, is not inconsistent with the language on student hazing or nonviolent conflict resolution.
Would this be extended to include things like teaching karate in school?
Madam Chair, that was the part where it was too martial. But I think in existing physical education and health classes, if we can hang on to those, that they are teaching students ways to, for example, break out of the hold of some person who attacks or accosts an individual. That does not involve turning around and delivering a karate blow. But
you know, just sort of common sense things that students should know.
Madam Chair.
Representative Biskin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair and Senator Kelly, could this potentially lead to teaching or incorporating like Eddie the Eagle programs in school?
The what?
Oh, yeah. Madam Chair,
gun safety
Representative Biskins, you're
training.
Sort of ahead of me on that one. We're talking about self-protection skills that can be taught probably without a gun range in the school.
Okay.
Oh, now I know what you asked.
Thank you. Touché. Madam Chair.
We always entertain amendments, Representative Biskin.
Madam Chair, I ask again for clarification from Senator Kelly what the offer or what's on the table at this point. I mean, Madam Chair, you put forward a potential exchange
potential
and Senator Kelly put forth the potential. Where are we at right now? What's on the table? What's being discussed, I guess, is what I'd like to know.
What we offered is the character education, the items in backpack on Section 50 and Article 2.
Is that, Madam Chair?
In return for accepting their bullying anti-bullying language.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
Is items in backpack the prohibition from school employees from using public resources for advocacy?
I'm sorry, lovingly referred to as the backpack.
All right. So, Madam Chair, is that what's on the table right now, and are we asking for an up or down vote on that, or has there been? I'm in uncharted waters here, and I want to know.
And I believe there's already been a counteroffer made, and I'm not even clear exactly on, besides the violence prevention. Well, what else did you want?
Oh, Madam Chair, the I thought I said violence prevention, the Senate's anti-bullying policy, and comprehensive family life and sexuality education, and that seemed to me to match up with the character education things. Now, Madam Chair, you weren't trying to move the House spending on character education, were you?
No.
We were talking about the policy
stuff. Yes, we're talking
about
policy.
Madam
and
Chair.
Would you be accepting our language on Section 50 then?
Well, Madam Chair, it would not include Section 50.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Madam Chair, I think, you know, the Senate would want to talk about that. I'm just saying, as yesterday Representative Biskins and I had a chance to chat, and I'd made a commitment to him that I would think about some policy matchups that the Senate might be interested in. He and I hadn't had a chance to meet yet, so when you brought up the character education piece, this was one of the ones I'd thought of, and so I thought I'd mention it today in response to your proposal.
Okay. Upping the ante just a little bit here. And I think we'll take it under advisement. Representative.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. Just for clarification, didn't we agree to just the one sentence under school board policy on R19 in the anti-bullying section? Isn't that what our discussion centered around the other day, that was what we both sides could agree to was all that was necessary after we heard from the School Boards Association and the fact that they have a model policy?
Yes.
This is what. So is that what we're talking about here?
I just
want clarification. Thank you.
That this would require all schools to have a policy, not a specific policy, but they'd have to develop their policy.
Madam Chair.
Senator Scheid.
Madam Chair, on Section 50, because I agree, I'm not at a point where I can accept that language. I would like, however, because I have trouble understanding what would be allowed. And when I get down to the last sentence, I guess it's item B, I wonder how that meshes with what's up above. So I'm just wondering what is it we're going to, what kind of communications are we saying can't go home in a backpack? I realize the backpack isn't exactly mentioned in here, but I understand.
Right. It was referred to kind of as
could the backpack. Could you maybe tell me what you're getting at here? I mean, it may seem self-evident, but it isn't to me.
Well, I would say sometimes there is stuff that goes home with students, especially before an election.
Before a candidate election.
Right, before a candidate election. And sometimes it has something to do with
ballot
issues within a district that are kind of over the line. They're not just informational. They're beyond that. And there's a lot of money spent on them. That's, you know... I know of candidates who have seen literature go out where the opponent was being touted in the literature that went home in the child's backpack. Those kinds of things do happen, and I think they're not common, but I don't think they should happen. It has not happened to me, so I'm not bringing this up as a personal. It was not my bill. Do you remember any more of the discussion on this? Representative Biskins?
Madam Chair, I do remember that this was Representative Holberg's bill, and we could possibly touch base with her during recess, and I could get some information, or we could invite her to come to the committee.
I think one of the problems was that the school's facilities were being used to run everything off, and they were partisan materials. The school facilities were being used to run it off. The boxes of the teachers were being used to put partisan material into, et cetera, et cetera. And in addition to it, going home with the kids on occasion.
Madam Chair, would that apply? I'm trying to think of how that might work. So you also, I mean, could you, for example, if I'm working at a school and I want to make sure that everybody has a piece of my campaign literature or somebody I'm supporting, I can't have it put in the mailboxes, even if I didn't use resources. I mean, it's not going home to students, just for teachers, staff or something. I mean, is that in here, too? I don't know. I mean, I'm not inclined to do that. But
only, I guess, if it were open to all candidates to come in and put their stuff in boxes.
Okay.
And I don't think we want to do that.
Could we ask Mr. Deans, Madam Chair, what policies school boards or he knows of? Because I think I know that when parents get information about referenda, bond issues, sometimes they think that it's promoting it, and it may just be the facts, the actual information. And it looks like you would allow that in your language. You would allow factual information to go home, defining what, you know, what kind of taxes there would be on what valued home and that sort of thing. Sure. So, but I know that sometimes citizens think that that's an abuse. And I was hoping that you weren't trying to curtail, important factual information.
Definitely not.
But I like
no attempt to do that.
What you think?
It's kind of the unusual thing that this
Madam
is designed
Chair.
To do. Representative Biskin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, seeing as we're going to come back to this issue after break, when we get the information from Representative Holberg, I'd kindly ask that we get both sides together at one time, the information. So if you want to hold off on asking Mr. Deans and maybe he can respond. That's my request to you, all right? And he can respond. And we can get both sides, continue to the discussion, and maybe we can just set this aside for right now.
We can certainly set it aside if that's okay with everybody.
Well, yeah, Madam Chair, I don't know. I was just going to ask what kind of information there was, out there in terms of policies of various school boards. I don't think that's a pro or con. I just wondered.
Yeah. I agree with you.
Okay. But it's just, we'll wait, I guess.
I don't know if most districts have policies on this or not.
Yeah.
Actually, but we will find that out.
Thank you.
All right. Well,
let me break.
You want to play? See, you guys have session at noon.
Are we going at noon?
Yeah, I don't know when the house is.
Oh, you're right. We'll just go straight to our little offer.
Didn't want to forget about it.
Who's got those, Jen? Pass them out, please. What time, Senator Kelly?
Well, we go in to session at noon, and you go to session at 2. So,
she sent us to support what? You know, another thing that we were planning to look at?
It's right on. Yeah.
It's not here. Yeah. Oh, the.
Thank you.
It says they must.
The
prohibits it.
Yes. Not when I throw in my northern one.
Or material.
It's okay. Listen, and they'll go through all sheets. We don't know how. I mean, we know there's a handful of them in favor. We know there's a handful of Republicans. Always the meeting. So the handful.
But you can have a fact.
Yeah.
I just.
All right, does everybody have a copy? All right, this is an offer designed to hopefully maybe get us to conclusion. However, if we aren't at conclusion by the end of Thursday, I don't think we are any longer authorized to do this, just so that you understand that. This is an avoid shutdown effort for education. So I guess you can take a look at it and you can see it. It includes some things that we've already discussed, that you've already offered, et cetera.
So Madam Chair, are you saying that if the Senate waits until Thursday that you'll stop talking about Racino?
Senator, I don't think we're ever going to stop talking about it. What I'm saying is the spending target of 867. You know, right now, we feel authorized to do that because it's part of the global. It's been part of the global offers. I don't think anything is for sure once we get to shutdown. So my hope is that we could finish education before shutdown, and this is an effort to do that. And this is pretty much the offer in education that the leadership has been talking about. And so we're putting it out here, wondering if maybe at least one committee here could remember that what we're here for are students and not whatever political agenda we may all have, and see if we can just come together and get this done.
Madam Chair, I think the Senate appreciates the fact that the House is now at the revenue target that we've been talking about, so I think that's a positive thing. Let me just make sure I understand the last. I think at least for me, we'll see whether other members of the Senate Working Group have questions. But the last three asterisks. I assume the access grants is Senator, is Representative Diskin's bill. That's the proposal there.
Okay. That was part of the global offer last night.
And then the college credit for high academic work.
That's get ready, get credit.
All right, but I liked the academic work part. If that's a substitute for the tests, you know, I think we might be making progress.
Well, the only additional tests that we ever discussed would be tests that students would choose to take that might help them make better choices in the future. Those were the tests that we were talking about, the EPAS and so on.
Well, Madam Chair, I'm wondering about the CLEP. The CLEP isn't helping them. It would.
But that allows.
The issue on that one was whether you could test into college credit or not. It doesn't involve academic work.
Yes, that allows them. That would be included. Those pieces in the governor's bill would be included, in our bill would be included.
And then the equalization equity provisions, what does that refer to?
Well, we had equalization in our bill for, we had another $300 equalization for excess levy referendums. We also had some equity provision for the metropolitan districts and an equity provision for districts that didn't even have a referendum.
Okay, so those are the, it's the House.
It's the House.
House equity equalization provision.
Right.
Okay.
Right. So we're offering those also.
Okay.
So that's pretty much where we're at. And I think since it's going on 12, do you want to discuss it, ask questions, or do you want to take it back? And
I think we could see if other members of the Senate working group have questions about it. But otherwise, my suggestion would be that we, since the Senate's going to go into a session in about 20 minutes, that.
And you don't want to miss it by getting there 5 minutes late.
Madam Chair, we've been accomplishing important stuff on the Senate floor.
Madam Chair, I think I understand from what your explanation to Senator Kelly. I'm fine.
And if you're not in a hurry, we had one more thing. And that was... we'll wait till after.
And Madam Chair, it's your intention to recess, am I correct?
Yes.
Okay.
I guess we'll be back after the House completes. You'll probably be done before we are today.
We might be in caucus while you're...
Yeah. I don't... Heaven only knows where we will all be this afternoon, but after the last House is free, we will try to be back here. So we're in recess.